why are people complacent? You know, why haven't we reached Middle America and the soccer moms and the Deep South? And I think that partially because there's so much inner work to be done in concert with the outer work as well. And so much of the peace movement is hateful, and you don't change people's hearts by yelling at them and saying and doing things driven by anger. And it's hard to be able to take the anger and the frustration that we just heard from the Iraqi students and all of that that's going on inside of us and the frustration and be able to, breathe that in and hold it and let out something that's totally different, that's been cooked. Thich Nhat Hanh talks about cooking your potatoes, that you can't eat raw potatoes, but, you put them on a pot and boil them and the steam and whatnot, the attention and the mindfulness that transforms it, and how we can do that. I don't think that you win, my mom's got a saying that you win more bees with honey than vinegar. And I think that that's one of the ways that this movement has to happen, is the transformation through being more gentle in our message. And maybe that gentleness comes from our willing to sacrifice, to put ourselves, to make the issue more critical.
I think that idea of sacrifice is important, and the fear that we talked about, I think you mentioned, Lisette. And then finally, the number of times in the conversation you talked about how many Americans, to believe what they believe, they have to not believe in the Iraqis' humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that, Americans, many Americans are unwilling to exchange themselves for Iraqis in... tomorrow, if the shock and awe bombing takes place, students just like us, we know now, we'll have all of that taken away. And so students here and other people need to realize that, maybe for a true sense of equality and solidarity, we need to be willing to give up everything, because... like he said, that we know that that's what's going to happen if we don't do anything, and that's maybe the least we can do to support them. I don't know. But it's a very scary prospect to give up that much. But we have the choice here. They do not have the choice there.
The peace movement has three weapons, love, knowledge, and patience. Like, if we can share love and spread knowledge and be patient and let things take the needed time. Like, we will overcome everything. It's just, it's a lot to ask everyone to do. You have to get the hate out before you can spread love.
I definitely agree with that. But, like, I remember just hearing the desperation in their voices. You have to realize that this is going to happen soon. And patience and time, that's already happened. Months have passed. And now we have to question, what are we going to do now? What can we do now? What do we have to do now in order to actually have an outcome? Because I think we've raised awareness, definitely. We've had marches, we've had teach-ins, we've had just talking to people. And I personally see it as it being sweet. I mean, I think that a lot of us have, I mean, personally, I don't go out there and just, you don't like the war, I hate you. No, it's tell me why, let's talk about it. And I think that that's definitely necessary, but you heard it in their voices. Mm-hmm. They said, can you do this tomorrow? Mm-hmm. Can you do this soon? We have to do something now. It's oh my gosh, it's just shocking.
That was one of the things that I found really powerful and kind of heartbreaking in a lot of ways. Just this... let's, do it now. They are clinging to any possibility whatsoever of stopping this thing that they can, and maybe, some parts of them are saying, okay, well, maybe if they get that word out, maybe if they broadcast, you know, maybe if they air this conversation, maybe it'll help postpone it or put it off or whatever. But yeah, it was the for me, just that kind of tone of desperation was just,
it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not about just, you know, this permanent crisis mode. I mean, this is something that, you know, these sanctions have been going on for the last 12 and a half years, and I realize that this is a new issue for a lot of people in America, but for them, this is nothing new. I mean, and they said that as well, that, you know, it's really imminent in this moment, but so, you know, we stave off this particular war, what's going to happen then? You know, what comes next? What's after this? And I think that the lack of planning and forethought and real clear plan for, you know, what is in the next year and a half, like the 2004 elections coming up, you know, just really looking at a feasible timeline for what this movement is going to do, not only, you know, in the next 7 days, but, you know, really thinking ahead and not just being reactionary, but actually creating an agenda. And, you know, I heard Aaron Magruder talk a couple weeks ago here at UCSB and was really moved by his talk. He's the cartoonist that does Boondocks,
yeah.
I think. And he said that the peace movement has to start playing to win. And it really makes sense. You know, I think what he was saying about, we love a noble loss, you know, and at least we tried, you know.
Sure.
That we really have to start playing to win and looking at feasible and viable strategies in the long term while still addressing, you know, the next 7 days.
Yeah, it seems that obedience has caused much more harm in the world than disobedience ever has. And how obedient are we being? And I think about the soccer moms and thing. I think really the bees' wings have been clipped by the fear that is consistently instilled in everyone, and tornadoes and sudden deaths. They don't talk about everyday people die on their deathbed, but that's not scary enough. So they keep pounding all this fear and this attack, and, you know, we're under attack. And they couldn't propose war as a solution unless people were convinced that they were under attack. No one would ever agree with war unless they were convinced we're under attack. And so how does the peace movement reach those people and make them realize that this is an illusion they created in their mind, that they're not thinking for themselves, they are just being fed this propaganda of fear, and that because of that they are voting and allowing for war to happen, and they're allowing their governors to turn the votes that they got into personal desires for their interests? How do we reach those people who can really make a difference, who could vote, the people that voted for Bush, to realize we're not under attack, we're the ones attacking, stop believing the fear, start, you know, changing the media? Like, well, how do we approach that, you know, change the media and all the different levels, you know? And there's a lot of things we could do on one way, and just in the balance of, you know, working to ourselves to become more peaceful, and talking and patience and disobedience. I'm just asking, I'm wondering, what should we do to address that fear-based theology that they continuously push down our throat?
I think that what's necessary is education. I mean, in general, more educated people are, I think, I strongly believe that people have compassion in their heart. If you know what's happening, you're going to feel it, and you're not going to stand it. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people just, you know, don't know. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, people lead, you know, busy lives. People don't have time to worry about what's happening in some distant land. They're thinking, you know, I have to pick up my kid at this time. I have to go check my email. I have to go to work. I have to cook. I have to clean. You know, just things like that that are going on here. We have to take care of ourselves too. But there's no time for education. I think that it's definitely needed that people go out there, they learn the facts, they realize what's happening, because a lot of people believe that this is just, you know, a great place, which, I mean, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I wouldn't. But, I mean, I remember when I was, like, in second or third grade, was it George Washington, father of our country, number one president, good old George. He'd make us sing this and, like, do a little march every single morning. I strongly believe that, you know, hey, you know, good old George, you know, just we're constantly fed all this, and people don't look at. And I think just education in general is like the key. It definitely is the key, because then you realize that we have a great power when it comes to our elected representatives. Mm-hmm. That's what we have to do. We have to go out there and, you know, look at our government and question it. Question our government. You know, absolutely just shock them, ask them questions, tell them, oh, why should I vote for you? You know, and just stick to it. Just educate other people about it. I think like education is key, because I can't stand it when people just kind of jump on the bandwagon, you know, yeah, peace, blah, blah, blah. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I think that it's necessary for people to do something when they're aware of what they're doing, because it's even worse if someone has to go, what are you for peace? I just believe in love, man. It's like, okay, great, but back it up. You know, I think education is just absolutely necessary.
Yeah, I've been struggling as I just travel around town, or if I'm on the freeway and I'll see any variety of cars that have bumper stickers or handmade sort of signs that are up in the windows that indicate that the person driving the car or the person who owns the car is in favor of a war, and most of the time they're beyond offensive. Once in a while I think, oh, well, maybe that's a little clever, but I'm always struggling with, do I say something? If I'm in the gas line and the guy in front of me has got a "Let's Roll" sign in his back window of his pickup truck, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I feel like that's the person I need to talk to, and something stops me. I don't know if it's just fear of impropriety or putting myself on the line, not wanting to make a scene. You know, well, maybe this isn't the best time to do it. You know, maybe a forum or a lecture is something better. You know, we all felt the urgency in their voice. An experience like this makes me realize that you do have to go out there, and it's the impact is perhaps minimal when I have a conversation with the guy in the gas line in front of me, but it's more than if I didn't. And if each of us in this room is doing that and has some small impact, there is some small effect, and there are a lot of us around the country that can do actions like that. That starts small, and you don't know where they will go, but they'll go nowhere if we do nothing.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm. This is the revolution right here. It's happening in these conversations. It's happening in every time we talk. We have to, I think, push people past their comfort level. I used to be like, oh, you know, but I don't want to like ruin this aristocratic dinner, and I don't really want to make them think about things they don't want to think about. We have to push them past their comfort level. I realize, like, I'm trying to figure out a way to, like, you know, be polite, but in a system that bases itself on destruction and genocide and catastrophes and destroying the environment and the capitalistic system that is planning on enslaving the masses, literally, that is pushing its culture of consumerism all over the world, where people are not pushed past their comfort level, which is really just sit at home and listen to this and continuously consume and be caught up with your their personal things. And I don't want to think about the war. It makes me sad. Or, you know, it's not up to me. I really, like, it's really a systematic issue. Like, you brought up education. It's in us from the beginning. The education system is in, it feeds us with propaganda and lies continuously. Every single person that I think that has been exposed to this education system, then we watch the television. It's this system. I think the revolution has to, I'm asking how, but we really have to, like you said, we have to start focusing on our goals to changing the thing that's making us lose. The thing that's making us lose is this system that's in place and keeping people complacent while they go destroy the world.
Wouldn't it be great if we could send out a mass mailing to every citizen in the United States, a postcard, something simple, saying, however much funding, you know, $100 or $50 of your taxes killed Iraqis today?
Just to go off what Leah said, you know, about cooking the potato. I mean, from what I read and hear from people who were active in the 80s and, you know, organizing now, at least, especially in the last 5 years, it's been much easier. Things like apartheid, apparently, just folks weren't as interested in getting together. But also the internet, I mean, it's convenient and it's what people enjoy and, you know, they do normally. And taking advantage, being able to take advantage, and already it's allowing for just incredibly easy, you know, and quick ways of communicating and organizing. I mean, taking advantage of that is it may be the key, the thing that organizers have always dreamed of but never had the ability to do, which is to just reach, you know, huge, immense amounts of people quickly and cheaply, and to be able to guide our activities that way.
More?
Well, I was just hoping, I know you guys were supposed to work on letters and articles and things like that. I don't want to take too much time from it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. You're reading my mind there. I was just going to kind of take a pulse from the group, and maybe we need to stretch or whatever, and I...